I'm delighted to welcome to Luckman Ireland House NYU for the first time and to This Irish American Life author Kevin McCarthy, most recently Wolves of Eden, a novel. And we'll talk maybe about your earlier books as well, Kevin. First of all, welcome.
Oh, thanks. Thanks, Marian. Thanks for having us.
I know it's not your first time in terms of dealing with crime fiction and the Luckman Ireland House connection, but we're delighted to welcome you here to our campus and hope you won't be a stranger again. Oh. And congratulations on the new book.
Oh, thanks very much.
It's a 2018 publication.
It is. It came out, the hardback came out in just in November, right before Christmas.
Okay.
And the paperback edition will come out in November 2019.
Do you want to tell us a little bit about Wolves of Eden? I don't know if there's any Irish component
specifically to
this as well. Okay.
No, specifically Irish and in many ways Irish American.
Okay, so tell us a little bit about the gestation of the project.
The gestation of it, the people, I was doing some workshops at Boston College last week, and someone asked me how did you get the idea for it and things, and like my other novels, like I think all novelists go through kind of a period after you write a novel, when kind of a fallow period where you're kind of wandering around aimlessly looking for something to do and kind of waiting for an idea to take you, you know, like what idea becomes a novel and what idea is, you wake up the next morning, oh, that's crazy, I'd never write that. And I happened to be on holidays visiting my parents out in Oregon, and I was reading Nathaniel Philbrick's book, The Last Stand, about the Battle of Little Bighorn, or the Battle of Greasy Grass, as the Lakota call it. And it struck me, as I was reading it, something I hadn't known, up to 40% of the infantry soldiers killed and cavalry soldiers killed in Little Bighorn were Irish,
mm-hmm.
Irish born, and another 10 or 20% were born Irish to Irish
American.
Parents here, or Irish American, and it really struck me, why didn't I know that? Why didn't I know that aspect of history? Of course, other soldiers were immigrant Germans and Swedes as well. You know, it was an immigrant army in the post-American Civil War, regular army. So it kind of led me to research further things. And then there was also, the more I researched it, the more I also realized there had been an awful lot of things written, not about the Irish specifically, but about Little Bighorn itself. So I kind of veered away from that and thought maybe not worth pursuing. But I came upon Dee Brown's book called The Fetterman Massacre. Dee Brown's the author who wrote Bury My Heart, A Wounded Knee, which people are very familiar with. The Fetterman Massacre is one of his earlier books, and it describes a battle prior to Little Bighorn that was the single biggest victory for the Native Americans over the U.S. Army in the West. And it took place in a place close to what's now Sheridan, Wyoming. And again, half the soldiers killed that day, of 90 soldiers killed, half of them were Irish born.
Right.
And and of those number, many had served in the American Civil War as well. And I just thought, it's calling to me. And
so after you kind of putting it aside, you felt like this was a sign.
Yeah, but it appealed to me, the idea that, you know, I mean, my family came to America much later than this, although I think my mother has a strand of her family that was there at the time. But it struck me that, you know, the young men who were, you know, who were fighting in the regular army were, you know, not unlike myself. And yet, through desperation and hunger and want of a job, they ended up kind of at the sharp end of a really genocidal project. Like, it's something that, you know, I think all of us would like to, you know, kind of, and I use pride or take pride in kind of with quotes or air quotes around it, but you'd like to think that your ancestors were not involved in a genocide or an ethnic cleansing. And so many of us who have ancestors from the time were, you know, the young men particularly. And I like the idea, in all my books, I think, I like the idea of the messy kind of underbelly underneath the received version of history.
Yeah, we never actually, now that you say that, Kevin, mm-hmm. we don't really think about, well, at least maybe that's just me, mm-hmm. I haven't thought about how the extent to which people were kind of pawns in terms of, you know, mm-hmm. making decisions based on, A, maybe coming to this mm-hmm. country in the first place, and then the situation they found themselves in, everyone's going off serving in the military, it's the thing to do, and then what we know are the consequences then in terms of Native American history and things like that.
And I actually, the characters say, and I came across this in diaries and letters and things like that from soldiers at the time, that, you know, what, you know, Cromwell's project in Ireland was not too different from the U.S. Army's project in the Dakota Territories. Mm-hmm. You know, and there were Irish soldiers at the time who made the link. You know, that here were soldiers who were displaced from an occupied Ireland, displacing another people. Mm-hmm. You know, through want of work, through want of a wage. And things, and so that appeals to me. In my first novel and my second novel, I kind of examine like the quieter aspects or the underbelly of the War of Independence and the Civil War in Ireland. And you know, we're all raised both here in America and in Ireland, you know, with the Western as a concept, the Western movies, the Western novels, you know, and of which I'm a huge reader and fan, and I always was. I love the Western film and I love Western novels. I think I read every Zane Grey and Louis L'Amour growing up. But we're given one version of it, and there's an accepted narrative. And I know certainly people are aware of how horrible the conquest of the West was, but maybe I was not aware personally of the part that the crucial part that Irish American soldiers played in it. And there's a great quote somewhere, if I could think of who said it, that we think of the West as a story of cowboys and Indians, but the West was a story of Indians and homesteaders and immigrant soldiers. Mm-hmm. And that's what I wanted to kind of explore, you know, that aspect of it.
So, let's come back to Wolves of Eden in that sense. Were you someone who always wanted to be a writer? So your first book is The Peeler, or Peeler?
Peeler, yeah.
Peeler, and then The Irregulars. Were you an avid reader as a kid? Were you always writing stuff? What's your journey been, kind of in general?
I think I always wanted to be a writer. My mother writes and has, you know, she always says that she, you know, breastfed us with a book propped on our heads, and so I suppose I've always had that. I've always written stories and comics and things like this, and I always did, and I read obsessively, kind of fiction mainly, but you know, anything I could get my hands on. So I always did want to be a writer, and then I wrote 3.5 novels before I had one published. So I've written 7 novels. I've had 3 published.
So this was something that predates. You've been in Ireland about 20 years.
I've been in Ireland 26 years now. Okay. It long predated my moving to Ireland. I moved to Ireland, so I met my wife, and we were living abroad. I met her in Japan. We were both teaching in Japan, and then we lived in Sweden as well, and went back and did our HDiPs and our masters in Ireland. Went abroad again, and then settle back in Ireland, and you know yourself, then,
yeah.
And then your kids come, and then you.
You're stuck.
Yeah. You cancel your house. No, I came to love it. I really came to. I visited Ireland as a kid, of course, because I have family in Ireland, from an Irish American family, obviously, but I had lived there properly. So that was in my early 20s.
At least the first mm-hmm. two books are very mm-hmm. driven then by Irish topics and Irish history.
Yeah.
Was it a bit of a departure then to come into the American context with this novel?
It was, yeah, and it's set 60 years prior to my other two novels as well, mm-hmm. 60-odd years prior to it. Yeah, I was just looking for a change, literally a change as well. I think I will return to the first two novels are of a series. Mm-hmm. They're kind of noir crime novels set during the wars, during the independence period in mm-hmm. Ireland. And I will return to it. There's a recurring character who I'm really fond of myself, but I just wanted a change after 6 years of writing. So, as I described, this novel came to me. When the novel comes to me, as a writer, when it comes to anyone, any writer, you don't shun it. Mm-hmm. You have to take it.
Go with it.
Because you're always a little bit worried as a novelist that the ideas won't come, or that one idea that you're willing to spend 4 years with. It won't come. You know,
So it sounds like you do a lot of research then in terms of making it historically accurate.
Yeah, but I do, for each of the book, I've done about a year's worth of research. I with this third novel, I'm getting better at researching the kind of the macro issues, the times, as it were, and then focusing more on what I need. Whereas for the first two books, you know, I'm no scholar, you know, so I would view myself as an amateur historian. So perhaps I read too much just to be sure that I get it right. Whereas an academic historian might be better able to select what was necessary. Mm-hmm. But I think I've gotten better at it each book. A, researching what I need, and B, not dumping all the wonderful history into the book. Mm-hmm. You have to kind of, you use what you need as a historical novice.
And know, do you think that maybe, Kevin, this may be untrue or unfair, but would you say that maybe you were, because you were writing about the American context and you'd grown up here and stuff like that, that you didn't feel as much of a sense of having to get it right then in the way that you might do about writing about the War of Independence and the Civil War in Ireland, no?
Yeah, good point. I never thought of that, actually, until now. No, it's a really good question. Possibly because maybe although the kind of arcane stuff about the West I didn't know either.
Right.
Yeah, and there's a lot that, you know, and I had to research, you know, the a lot of the Irish language and things like that in this book, which of course I wanted to get right as well.
Mm-hmm.
And
and do you just research at home, Kevin, or are you one of these writers
go,
who has to go to the place and all this? So tell us a little bit about that journey.
My wife and I spent about 10 days in Wyoming, Montana, researching this. It was one of the best. It was a research trip. Obviously, it was work, in quotes, but it was one of the nicest holidays we ever had. And but I feel it's vital. And I know some novelists might disagree, or some writers might disagree, but I like some descriptions say of the mountains and the sky over the mountains, and you know, they're not big, dense descriptions, but they come directly from seeing them firsthand. You get a feel for a place when you do it, and I think it's vitally important. So I spent, for my first novel, I spent about 3 weeks down in West Cork, and I'd been to Cork numerous times, obviously, and West Cork particularly, but yeah, I spent about 3 weeks around Bantry and Skibbereen, that kind of area, for the first book. The second book set in Dublin, where I lived, so that was I felt like an atmosphere kind of off the streets, as it were. But I would, and I was just in the New York Public Library yesterday, there in Bryant Park, in the reading room, and I was wondering to myself, do you need to go to libraries anymore to research? And I would answer yes. I still did a bit of research in libraries and things like that, mainly because there's librarians themselves are such a great resource. They can point you in the right direction, or in a direction you wouldn't have thought of yourself. I think primary sources are great as well, which you need to go to the library for. Although a lot of like letters and things like that are available online, which is so wonderful. I honestly don't know how people wrote historical fiction before the internet.
Are you then, in terms of your writing habit, Kevin, do you have a strict routine in terms of when you write and where you write and things like that?
Not where I write, but yeah, I would, when I'm writing a novel, I try and I don't do it every day because I job share, so I work 5 days on and 5 days off. So my weeks off, I'm quite rigid. I would do the housework. Every writer, the great secret of writers writing from home is the amount of housework they do to justify their existences.
So, would you give yourself like a word count for the day?
Yeah, I would get kind of the jobs around the house done, and then I would do about 1,000. I try for 1,000 words. I'm happy between 600 and 1,000, you know. And quite often I find myself going over it. And other times, if I just hit 600, I'm happy. I try and write the first draft as fast as I can, which in my case is not very fast, but I kind of write it without judgment, and I write probably way too much. Like for this book, I think it's final word count on this book is maybe it's 380 pages, I think. But I would have written 500 pages for it and cut it back. And some people might say not enough, you know, you just don't know.
And so how, it must be interesting, Kevin, with this novel, and because it's published in the first instance in the United States, how were you defined as a writer now? I mean, with a name like Kevin McCarthy, you kind of can't get away from the Irishness, but it must be kind of an interesting journey in terms of how American readers, and kudos to you, it's been very well picked up here and everything.
Yeah, thank God,
How has that experience been in terms of how people engage with you? As a, you know, there's such expectations of a quote-unquote Irish writer.
Yeah, it's strange for me because I'm Irish American. I'm Irish and American. I'm a citizen of both countries, but I've lived most of my life in Ireland. Mm-hmm. Took my adult life. I lived far longer in Ireland than I ever lived in the States. So I kind of identify as both, but also as neither wholly either. If you get what I mean, I'm neither wholly Irish nor wholly American, kind of in a weird way anymore. But I also am both, quite happily and proudly both, I suppose. But I think it's not a bad place for a writer to be, because if you're a little outside things, I'm a little bit outside things in America here when I come back. People ask me questions about, in Ireland, what's happening with Trump or something? I said, I have no idea. I've lived in America in 30 years. And people ask me things about Ireland, and I said, well, yeah, I really don't speak Irish terribly well. You'd have to have somebody does. But because of that, I suppose, and a lot of writers will say this, being slightly outside the culture you're writing about, or even living in, is probably good for a writer, because you're forced to observe things maybe closer than someone who's of the culture mm-hmm. might. So in Ireland, I'm considered an Irish-American writer, and here, apparently, I'm an Irish writer. So it's kind of and I'm happy with both.
Easy with it. So in your time mm-hmm. in Ireland then, Kevin, mm-hmm. you've seen this major surge in interest mm-hmm. in terms of especially the genre that you've mm-hmm. written in and how has that must be kind of really on one level gratifying because mm-hmm. you kind of are writing in that genre mm-hmm. and then I suppose it in a way makes it kind of more competitive because there's so much stuff coming out.
Interesting. Yeah, there's like my first two novels are crime novels so I would be I have a short story included in the Irish Crime Writing in the 21st Century. Mm-hmm. Down These Green Streets, it's called. Mm-hmm. It's a great collection. Not because of the stories in it, but it's just a wonderful compendium of Irish fiction. But, and that was the first time I noticed or thought of myself as part of a kind of a movement. Where this book is not a crime novel per se, although there's a terrible crime in it, and there's an investigation into the crime.
So this will be more historical fiction as a category?
More historical fiction, yeah exactly. Although it's based around a crime. You can't change your spots. Mm-hmm. So I like, stories involving investigations. So it has one, certainly. Mm-hmm. And it's about a murder in the face of the large crime of genocide, I suppose. It's funny. The other thing that's interesting, from the time I started my first novel, Peeler is about an RIC man, and another character featuring it is a black and tan, and I thought I might be doing something vaguely subversive in writing that, but by the time I finished it, Mary McAleese had been to the war graves in Verdun, and the Irish involvement in World War One was being kind of memorialized and celebrated, so the traditional view of history in Ireland of that time period, where you suppressed the fact that your grandfather was an RIC man, or that your great grandfather your grand uncle had fought in the British Army, those were suppressed. That was opening up. So I was kind of lucky, in a way, or I kind of hit the zeitgeist at the right time. Mm-hmm. My first novel involves a World War One veteran who's an RIC man, but it just happened to be at the time when that was becoming accepted to talk about it.
And you didn't plan it that way?
No. My wife's grandfather was an RIC man. Now, he'd retired before the Troubles, the initial iteration of the Troubles, mm-hmm. but I was kind of always fascinated by that, and we researched him, and then I thought, it might be really interesting. No one's written about this. That was my only take on it. No one's written about this. And I like crime novels. It just so happened that by the time I finished it, that had kind of occurred. But the one really interesting thing after that first book, I was reading at the Bantry, in the West Cork Literary Festival in Bantry, and the number of... I noticed there were more pensioners in the crowd at my reading than I would normally get, I suppose. And afterwards, several of them came up to me and said, thanks for writing this. My father was an RIC man, and we could never talk about it. Mm-hmm. And I was absolutely stunned. I thought there might be a negative reaction, particularly in West Cork, and I said it in West Cork because it was the kind of the most violent place in the War of Independence, and the most happened. Mm-hmm. I never occurred to me that people sitting there had relations who were on the other side,
right.
The side I was writing about.
That must be very gratifying.
It was really gratifying. It was really moving, kind of, in a strange way. Because it's fiction, it's entertainment, and it's
but you had immersed stories, yourself in.
I had, and I really came to the RIC where they were young, Irish Catholic people, men who, all men of course, but who generally wanted Irish independence or wanted a form of home rule mm-hmm. Themselves, but were kind of also viewed themselves as a duty to order and keeping chaos at bay, and they didn't love the crown particularly, but they were seen as its eyes and ears. Mm-hmm. So they were in this impossible place in Ireland. And yet it was a wonderful job to have. They married school teachers. It was a public service pension and things, so it was I just saw all the contradictions there. Again, the narrative that we don't hear about, the narrative that runs under the accepted narrative, kind of struck me. So yeah, I've been there in a time of great change, but it's change that suited me as a novelist in some ways. I've been lucky. Yeah.
So Wolves of Eden, you were telling me before we started chatting here, has just it was named as one of the best books of 2018 on Amazon.
Yeah, that's one of the top.
I mean, that's amazing.
You
must be delighted with that.
Yeah.
It puts your work in a kind of different setting in terms of the American context and topic and everything. There's a lot of interest in that period in American history.
I think there is. Yeah. Again, people love a Western. And it's still kind of a defining, mythos. I think in America, particularly now in kind of troubled times. What do you look back? Do you look back on the good or the bad? And the Western is a place. The other thing about Westerns too that I found again, it was every immigrant group that came to America had some involvement in what we term the West, the American West, or the whether that's the conquest of the Native Americans in a kind of shameful way, or whether it's in the way of kind of homesteading and progress, if you can call it that, on the backs of all the horrible things that happened. But every immigrant group can claim part of that Western heritage in a way, in their own way. It wasn't just a history of, of the white cowboy. There were black homesteaders, there were Irish and German and Jewish and Mennonite, and I talk a lot about the Jewish soldiers who also fought in the Civil War and stayed in the army for different reasons and things. So the Western for Americans, I think, is kind of it's defining overall, but it's also you yourself can interpret your ancestral role in the West in different ways. So I think people love the West.
And it's funny, Kevin, when you describe it in those terms, it's so iconically American, but it's so made up of the diversity that you describe.
I suppose the only Native Americans there were the victims in some ways.
Will you do us the pleasure of reading from Wolves of Eden?
Oh, I'd love to, yeah.
So wherever you want to pick out or whatever section you want to pick out.
Sure, I'll read a section here. The setting for Wolves of Eden is Fort Phil Kearny in the Dakota Territories. I think I mentioned it's close to to Sheridan, Wyoming now, Story, Wyoming, I suppose. And it was a real place, and there were real soldiers. I've used a few figures from the historical record, one of whom was a photographer sent by the Smithsonian Institute to Fort Phil Kearny to record the Laramie Peace Talks between the Sioux and Northern Cheyenne and the U.S. government. Basically, peace talks. Mm-hmm. And he was a photographer sent to record through images the Laramie Peace Talks. So he was at the fort at the same time as my characters. So the section I'll read you is he's gone to take photographs out in the field. The two main characters who are Irish-born, they're from Kerry, and if you could keep in mind that English is not their first language, they would have been Gaelgars or Irish speakers originally. And this is in the form of a written testament. So, okay. I do tell myself betimes, perhaps our friend would have left the fort without escort anyway. He often did in the early days, for despite the danger well known to all in the fort, Ridgway did not fear the world the way yourself and myself might. He did not look out into the forest and see the dark parts of it, or the shadows, but saw instead the fair side of things, the way the heavens carve up the spaces between the branches with their light, or the way dew does sparkle in the morning grass in a sunlit meadow. He would see the world like this, and he would want to make one of his pictures of it. Many is the time we try telling him that behind all the fine and pretty spots where he might like to make his photographs, the Powder River country is a place of rough peril, and that in a sunny meadow may stalk Sioux braves who would like nothing more than to claim a fair-haired scalp such as his. But he would only smile and tell us that if a man did not think ill of others, then he could only hope that others would not think ill of himself, and that as a Quaker he would not raise a hand against another man. This, he did believe, would keep another man from raising a hand against him. More fool, that Quaker, may God be with him. Over time, we became accustomed to him being here one minute and gone for us the next for to make his pictures of some natural wonder or Indian girl. so it oft happened that my brother or myself, or even little Addie Metzger, a long-time veteran Bill like ourselves, a Dutchy bugler, who does be boon companion and liked by all the nations of C Company, well, him or we would up and say nearly once a week, "Ho, boys, where did Ridgway get to now?" And we would set about to find him. Like you will?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Do you recall a time in late August when he did accompany a troop of us sent as the paymaster's guard to Fort Smith? Well, we made the camp the first night beside the Upper Powder River, in a clearing, where there was the black remains of old campfires, Indian or trapper or army or what, we did not know, but never mind, it was a grand place for a bivouac, and as pretty as one of Ridgway's pictures. We caught 7 trout between us in the clear water, for to eat with our beans and pilot bread. That meal by the fire is a fine memory. I will always keep it with me. It was a happy time, and there are not many I can recall since we came here.
That's great, Kevin. I can't wait to read it. Thank you for coming in to share your updates on it. And for any of those who are interested, again, the title of Kevin's book is Wolves of Eden, a novel by Kevin McCarthy. You're definitely in Ireland a long time because you're not using a middle initial. Americans always use a middle initial, especially when they have a name like Kevin McCarthy.
I know, it's like John Smith, isn't it?
No, but I always feel like it's an Americanism.
I never thought of that.
It's a great cover.
It's a wonderful cover. Yeah. It's published by W. Norton, and they did a wonderful job. And I think they have an artist they use a lot, and he's done a few other big covers that I've seen. It's wonderful. I couldn't have asked for a better cover.
It's really
don't have anything to do with covers.
Yeah. You're kind of at the mercy of others. Before I let you go, is the next idea for the next novel in mind?
The idea is there. I'm about to start a push.
Yeah.
I may actually do another research trip soon.
Okay.
Take another holiday.
Okay. Well, listen, Kevin, don't be a stranger. Thank you for taking time out of your
Mary.
Trip.
Thanks for having us so much.
And now you know exactly where we are, and thank you for sharing your exploits and everything about Wolves of Eden, and of course your earlier novels with us. I hope we'll meet you again.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.